And this paper detailed how the CIA's mind control program, MKUltra, was not stopped in 1973, as the CIA had told Congress. Hey guys, it's Jose Galison. You're watching No Way Jose. You can find us on No Way Jose YouTube channel. Also, all the major audio podcatchers and Rumble as well. Today, my guest is Austin Picard. We're continuing our series on Jonestown. This should be the final episode. I do want to remind you guys how this works. If you're watching this publicly, if like you're not a Patreon or patron, then you are watching this well after this got streamed. So you could have watched this way earlier. And if you want to get that, usually how this works is I'll record these. I'll do a live stream for my patrons, and obviously they can watch it back later. And then roughly about a week or so, these ones have been a little bit longer because I've been doing a lot of live streams lately covering the 764 stuff. But, you know, roughly about a week or so later, these will come out for the public. But if you want to get that early stuff, and then also a few other perks, the lowest level just to get the early stuff is $2. That's patreon.com, just NoWayJose2020. The highest level is my sponsors. I read them off every episode. I have Toad, who's my co-host on Tower Gang. You follow him at Tower Gang Toad. And I also have at Abrogate D's. Then Kevin B. Clark, a full-time guitarist and private music teacher in the New York area. Then at Z-O-V-E-R-A-C-K. Then at _ infinite zeal. Then Jacob Daniel of the Biblical Anarchy podcast at Biblical Anarchy. Like I've been saying, I was on his show not too long ago. Definitely go check out his stuff if that sounds like something to appeal to you. I think he just had on today Jack Lloyd to talk about his Israel-Gaza type stuff, which I'm assuming, you know, I think Lloyd was a little bit on the Israel side there, so that might be interesting. And I know I don't think Jacob is, so that might have been an interesting one for you guys out there. Then also have Tim Tuttle at Jolly on Klebold. He was the one who made that intro. They also have at StinkySock420, singer of the band Bender, which is kind of like a metalcore band. So if you liked that intro, you're definitely probably like their music. So definitely go check that out. And then one final big thank you to my, I need to come up with a term for this. I guess my corporate sponsor, although they're not even really corporate. They're definitely smaller, but I do want to give a big shout out to him and also to my patrons as well, because as I mentioned earlier with the 764 stuff, there was an arrest today with Kevin Spitz, which is kind of, or Kyle Spitz, I don't know why I said Kevin. That's kind of what, you know, started this kind of whole deep dive, is when that big viral thing came out and that connected to some other work that Ken and BX had been doing, and so then I kind of publicized it here. So you guys are, you know, to some small part, you guys are genuinely responsible for a pedophile going to jail. So to some extent, because I do think the work that was done here, and then, I mean, to a lesser degree, obviously, than like BX and Ken, I do think that contributed in some form or fashion to that happening. So, hey, you know, pat yourself on the back, and definitely a big pat on the back to Fox and Sons. If you got, as I mentioned with the multiple perks earlier, the $5 level, I'm giving away two bags of coffee to a $5 or higher, you know, Patreon member. So if you, like I said before, patreon.com is NoWayJose20. But fans of No Way Jose, use code Jose to receive 15% off your order of $30 or more. Orders of $37.99 and over always ship free. This is only the continental U.S. www.foxandsons.com. He isn't just an advertiser. He supports, you know, people who are doing the stuff that I do, other liberty type people. I mean, like I said, in some small form, he's helping me keep doing this along with all my Patreon members. And as I said, we, to some in an indirect fashion of some sort, we to some extent, we put away a pedo. So that's great stuff. You know, as I said, pat yourself on the back. Give him a thanks by going to buy some coffee. He started Fox and Sons out of his love for coffee and a way to honor his times with his dad. And he took those times he had with his dad and passed them on to his kids to teach them about entrepreneurship. The beans are good stuff. I can tell you, I'm usually a guy who likes to put a little bit of cream in it, but I've been drinking these black just because they're delicious. They're fresh, high quality from small family farms, organic, fair trade, small batch. Let's get Austin in here and get into it. Big thanks to my patrons. Big thanks to my sponsors. You guys enabled me to do this kind of stuff, and this is really important work and breaking stuff. But with that, let's get Austin in here. What's up, my bud? How you doing?
Good, man. How are you doing, brother?
Great, great. I mean, as I've been telling you earlier, I've been kind of in like paranoid schizophrenic land for a while, but it's really cool to see this kind of pay off. Like I said, I'm more of like an indirectly responsible, I think, to some form. Definitely BX and Ken are really, you know, really what made this happen by really going down this rabbit hole and making it, putting it out there. And I think kind of put it in a, made it so that the feds were in a position where they kind of had to, or they're going to look really fucking bad. So it's just cool to see this happening. I do want to clarify right now, to be specific, technically we don't know what charges this guy is being brought up on, because if you look at the booking, it just says federal crimes, but I think we can deduce from that it's probably related to the pedophile stuff. I know there's also the people who think maybe some sort of murder type stuff with his mom. That wouldn't be a federal crime. So, I mean, yeah, maybe they might add that to some list of crimes, but I would assume the crux of the matter here is probably going to be the pedophile stuff. So, but anyways, Austin, I haven't got a chance to watch your newest episode. I watch them anytime new stuff comes up for you. I check it out almost immediately. But it seems like your newest episode may have been somewhat inspired from some of our conversations, because I know we, in a previous one of the series, were talking about Holmes and the Aurora shooting and just kind of some of the weird stuff going on there. So it looks like you kind of sort of covered that. I mean, not specifically Holmes, just kind of an overarching kind of that theme. So do you just want to like let the audience know about that? Just kind of what your newest stuff you've been covering, and I don't know, maybe what kind of rabbit holes you're digging in now. I don't know if you're like me, it seems like you are, to where you just kind of, whatever is your newest thing that you're like really just honing in on, that's what you then go for, as opposed to, I saw a clip recently, I think it was actually Jinx or some artist was talking about, like, when it comes to art or and stuff, you kind of just have to hone in on what speaks to you, as opposed to what you think will speak to the audience, and then in turn that usually will end up speaking to the audience because you find your audience, as opposed to some corporate bullshit where you're just trying to figure out what you think people will like.
That has 100% been my experience. Like, my, I guess, like, my process from the beginning, I pretty much was trying to really reflect on, like, I tried to just go with my gut more than anything, like what really emotionally resonated within me. And that's honestly how I've chosen every single episode topic that I've done is something that, man, on a, I really do feel like it's kind of hilarious, because I'll be sitting in the rec room, you know, doing the research, then sitting down and finally recording, and man, it's like an emotional roller coaster. It's extraordinary, but I don't think I've done a single episode without bringing myself to tears, basically, like at least once. But, you know, I feel like you have to emotionally resonate with the subject matter, or, you know, it won't necessarily come through, I think.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think it's the best approach from me personally. But yeah, if you're interested in maybe some tenuous connections that seem to fortify and reinforce credible narrative that I'm putting forward in regard to James Holmes, like, check it out, honestly, because I feel like from consuming as much as I have as far as podcasts are concerned with the Aurora shooting and James Holmes, I feel like I at least I think there's some more strange connections than you would typically see elsewhere. So hopefully you appreciate it. But honestly, you know, I just like to focus on what narrative stands out to me, right, personally. And all I have to say is the moment James Holmes says, I was being surveilled and followed by the feds. And I really thought the FBI was going to apprehend me right before I began the mission, right? And it's just like there's so much involved with James Holmes basically claiming that he was in a dissociative state when he carried out the shooting. And he didn't even basically remember feeling anything during the course of the shooting. And I mean, he allegedly put headphones on, was listening to techno at you know, full volume whenever he carried out the shooting as well. And man, there's just so many strange connections with that guy, right? What he was studying at the PhD level in neuroscience, like temporal illusions and this Salk Institute and DARPA. I mean, there's just, it's extraordinary once again. And the biggest part for me was how many weird crossover threads there were between James Holmes and Adam Lanza less than, you know, 5 months later. I believe December 14th is when that happened, right? So
yeah, I think we mentioned the previous episode, they both, I think it was Adam Lanza and Holmes, both make references to mind rapists,
yeah,
which is a weirdly therapist. Specific, which yeah. Like, I don't know, whatever, maybe there's some rational explanation to it, but it is weird.
It's extremely weird. Okay. Yeah. And like for both of them to actually refer to their therapist as the rapist. But yeah. Then, I mean, James Holmes himself, like he goes as far as to claim that he was like hiding, like that basically he had to carry out the mission or he would have to suicide. Mm-hmm. Right. And man, it seemed like that Dr. Robert Duncan, I believe was his name when I mentioned him last episode, and I was reading more into what he was saying, and that fits very well with what he was claiming, because basically he was saying that a lot of these Manchurian candidates, there's kind of a duration of time before they pick up on their programming. And not necessarily always is the case as far as like, I mean, certainly not with like, I mean, I guess you can point to Sirhan Sirhan, and he clearly seemed to break free a little from his programming later in life, and at least enough to be able to claim that he was programmed and that he had no control of himself in that moment. But so it did like fit perfectly with that, because it seems like, and I've even heard stories of like, I've read this story where this guy claimed that He shot himself, killed himself after breaking into an amusement park. And he I'm pretty sure the notion is that he was potentially programmed to commit a mass shooting at an amusement park. And the only way that he could reject his programming was to kill himself. Right. And so I can't remember the details in that, but I believe there was some extraordinary details that kind of pointed to that.
I remember there was something weird about, I don't know if it was tunnels or what he said. Mm-hmm. Like, I just wanted to see the something. So it was very bizarre. I don't know if it was tunnels or, I mean, maybe I'm just conflating that with that the Drew Tunnel stuff, but like, I'm assuming like we probably shouldn't take that too overly serious, like as like an actual location or thing, because I mean, assuming someone was being mind raped or whatever, there would be probably some level of deception, or you know, I don't know, like, so the idea that like whatever place he was thinking he was gonna go may or may not be a real place, who knows?
I mean, right, for sure, man.
What bizarre stuff.
And what James Holmes said, like in his believe it was his psychiatric like evaluation, sanity evaluation, I think is what it was. It was like in September of 2013 or something. And he like in his own writing, he said like, it seemed like he was repeating his programming, right? It's so crazy, man. He begins by saying that anxiety and depression, both serotonergic system anyway, though, no effect when needed. First appearance of mania occurs. Not good mania. Anxiety and fear disappears. No more fear. No more fear of failure. Fear of failure drove determination to improve, better and succeed in life. No fear of consequences. Primary drove aversion to hatred of mankind. Intense aversion of people, cause unknown. Began long ago. Suppression by greater fear of others. No more fear. Hatred unchecked. Start small. Buy stun gun and folding knife. Research firearms laws and mental illness. Buy handguns. Committed shotgun, AR-15, and handgun. Wildcard. Explosives. Simplest and least suspicious, gasoline and oil. Acquire remote detonation system and body armor. Practicing shooting at Byers Canyon rifle range, which, by the way, he does like this weird sort of Oswaldian, you know, handing out flyers or something type of situation where he's basically, he makes himself known, like, remember me type of situation. It's so strange, man. It really is. There's a lot of that, right? Very similar to just pattern recognition. I mean, how many times can we reference that, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah. And then he says, can't tell the mind rapist's plan. If plan is disclosed, both normal life and ideal enactment on hatred failed. And then it says, Mr. Holmes said, if I told, this is his quote again, if I told them, then I would be locked up and could not carry out the mission. I had to complete it in order to not suicide. Mr. Holmes explained that the mind rapist was the psychiatrist. That was, and I loved it. And this is what not Jolyon Klebold sent, you know, and posted on Twitter too, and had sent me in the DMs. And dude, it's perfect because it is exactly like, how is it a coincidence? Like, I mean, I guess it could be an extraordinary coincidence, but I mean, the fact that the Adam Lanza, I mean, because that, according to Dr. Peter Langman, is where that came from, and he basically outlined that in Lanza's view, growing up in a culture and learning how to function socially is a process of raping innocent minds. He stated the entire philosophy behind education, the brutal indoctrination of pristine minds so as to propagate some delusional system of cultural values. He referred to children who've been mind-fucked by culture rapists, viewing the imposition of culture onto children as a form of rape.
Yeah.
He'd like to take the word therapist and break it into the rapist.
Yeah. One of these days I need to look into, I've said this before, and I may have even said to you, my explanation, like if I'm trying to explain how this could possibly happen, was that Arrested Development had that joke where Tobias is
An-al-rapist,
the rapist.
The world's first an-al-rapist. And it read anal rapist, remember? That was it.
That's great. Like that was like, so then from there you could easily make the jump from, oh, easily therapist, the rapist, right apart. So it's like, exactly. Maybe that's something like influence the culture to where like that was like, but I'd have to look and see when that came out. That may not even hold up. I just feel like that was roughly that time period, but
that does fit with the fact that James Holmes, I mean, I read something that said that James Holmes watched Arrested Development and liked that show. Like I read somewhere, like he had like a list of a few shows that he liked, and that was one of them.
Yeah, but it's a pretty decent strange show. I mean, I don't think it's like amazing, but it's pretty decent. Yeah. But that's only my explanation. But even with that, it's still weird. It's still the idea that you then put those together and associate it with your psychiatrist or whatever. Right. But yeah, but with I guess we probably ought.
No, what? Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, you're good. but I was just gonna say with that, I think probably we should actually get into the topic.
My bad.
I mean, I love shooting the shit with you, but we're back to Jonestown. I think we're kind of wrapping things up, but I think this is where we're gonna get really. I mean, don't get me wrong, we've been covering a lot of interesting stuff, but this is really where we're gonna get into like, okay, people really start to see the patterns here. But I think what the best place to start off, probably the most pressing thing to that really is most related to Jonestown, and we'll kind of touch on why it's significant, is the body count. So I think that's probably a good place to start, and we'll get into that, and what is the significance of the body count and the ever-changing body count. So
and like to it, it's just to me, like people who are watching all of this happen in real time, I mean, they really thought there was like some, you know, mass casualty event was occurring and continually, right? They thought people were just being, you know, destroyed down in Guyana, right? They had no idea. They thought it was some ongoing conflict, right? And, and by the way, L. Fletcher Prouty, right? He had like some very interesting pushback against the official narrative of Jonestown. And he mentioned that, and by the way, he was like the chief of special operations for the Joint Chiefs of Staff, right? Under President, under JFK, I'm pretty sure. And yeah, and he held the rank of colonel in the United States Air Force and subsequently became a critic of foreign policy after JFK was assassinated. And particularly, he was basically pushing back against the CIA as often as he could. And so he pushed back against the official narrative behind Jonestown, claiming that he said the Joint Chiefs of Staff had prepared air shipments of hundreds of body bags. They didn't normally keep that many in any one place. Within hours, they began to shuttle them down to Georgetown, the main city. They couldn't possibly have done that without prior knowledge that it was going to happen. It shows that there was prior planning. We would provide the agency with the things they were requesting without any questions. That's the way the business works. The JCS, Joint Chiefs of Staff, wouldn't have moved at all on their own. They didn't give a damn about Jonestown. These are the kinds of earmarks that define the hand of American intelligence. apparently there was this radio transmission that was the first to report what happened there, right? And allegedly, the first to report this the massacre was on a special CIA frequency, and the transmission was, this is what people claim, the transmission was Richard Dwyer after he terminated Jim Jones, right? Which that kind of falls into place perfectly, especially since he was, he was a part of Leo's group, right, with the concerned relatives that actually brought him there. And then he had also gone with them to the Port Kaiama airport or airstrip, right, when they were all killed. And then he inevitably returned to Jonestown during the death tape. And you hear Jim say, take Dwyer out of here. Take Dwyer on down to the East House. And then he says it a third time, get Dwyer out of here before something happens to him. And it's a little, you know, that's why William Holsinger was so, like, he honed in on Richard Dwyer, especially after he got that Berkeley professor's penal colony, paper. And so, anyway, to the body count, basically the official narrative is that on November 18th, 1978, willingly or unwillingly, the followers of the charismatic Pentecostal leader Jim Jones drank cyanide-laced fruit punch, which, by the way, was Flavor-Aid. And all the Jonestown nerds get pissed that that people think it was Kool-Aid. But
that was like the cheapo knockoff of Kool-Aid.
Yeah. Hey, they were communists, dog. Yeah. It's like, we can't buy the good stuff, man.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny, though.
Fuck the corporations.
So there, over 300 children were allegedly made to drink it, right? And syringes full of the mixture were emptied into infants' mouths. Those who didn't join Jones' so-called revolutionary suicide were injected with poison. Others tried to run for the surrounding jungle, only to be shot by one of Jones' armed guards. 918 people died that day. And basically, well, allegedly. So now in the archives at SDSU, they basically draw into question the rising death toll. And this is all based on Dr. Leslie Mutu, who was the chief pathologist, the Guyanese chief pathologist, who was the first on the scene. And they basically say that revisions to the toll were continual. 363, 405, 775, 800, 869, and then finally 918, right? And that's why to newspaper readers and watchers of the evening news, like, it seemed almost as if the slaughter was ongoing rather than a fait accompli, right? And amid the confusion and horror, the escalating body count provoked suspicions, though explanations abounded. It was said that the count was consistently low because the bodies of children lay unseen beneath the corpses of adults. So skeptics pointed out that some of the earliest reports listed only 82 children among 363 dead. A report by the AP on November 25th, 1978, listed 180 children among 775 cadavers. The final count recorded by the Miami Herald on December 17th reported that 260 children were among the dead. And so, I mean, the children's presence was clearly known from the beginning, right? And I mean, it makes no sense that it wasn't taken into account from day one. It should have been the top priority, at the very least. I mean, and Leslie Mutu and the Guyanese, and by the way, the United States Army, that was members of the Army who were there at the time on site, they signed off initially on that count of 463, I think was the count that they signed off on. And so anyway, even if the dead had been counted from the air, right, like from the aerial viewpoint, and even if one assumed that all the children had been hidden from sight, right, which photos attest that's not the case, the body count, it should have been more, clearly more than 600, right, from day one. So a week passed before the body count stabilized at 918. And when it did, skeptics wondered how it was possible that 363 bodies had concealed 550, particularly when 82 of the 363 were said to have been small children. So even mathematically, Jonestown did not make sense, right? So from the first initial reports, like this headline right here from the New York Post, November 21st, 3 days after the massacre, the headline reads, "Cult dies in South American jungle. 400 die in mass suicide. 700 flee into jungle." Out of the alleged 1,100 members of the People's Temple present at Jonestown, the body count originally agreed upon by U.S. military authorities on the site, as well as the Guyanese who performed the initial body count, it was 408. So 16 survivors were reported to return to the U.S., although later it was confirmed a total of 33 people allegedly survived. So during a State Department briefing on November 20th, John Bushnell, who was the Deputy Assistant Secretary of State for Inter-American Affairs, he said, quote, "We believe the area in and around Jonestown has been thoroughly covered and no trace of additional survivors has appeared. However, we believe no stone should be left unturned, so we continue our search." So it just so happens the first to arrive were 100 Guyanese troops ordered to search the jungle for survivors. And right after that, it was like 300 U.S. Green Berets were on the site. And 600 of the best trained commandos from the British Black Watch Special Forces Regiment had coincidentally been running training exercises nearby.
Always and, seems to be the case, huh?
Yeah, I know, right? They're either, it's a simulation or something, but
yeah, you're probably going to tell me too, this exercise was literally this basically exact scenario too, probably.
You're right, dude. I mean, crazy, man. But yeah, that's always the case, it seems. But this is even crazier because I stumbled on this later. And this, according to Charles Huff, who was one of the Green Berets in charge of the operation at Jonestown, 16 highly trained soldiers who participated in and witnessed the operations or the operation all died. And all of their deaths were designated suicide.
Wait, so 16 say that again. Who are these specifically?
These were specifically the Green Berets, and there were 300 who were on the site, right? But so 16 out of 300 all committed suicide.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess that's not like too crazy, but it's still
not too
a lot.
Crazy, but it's still quite still a bit. Fucking lot. You have to imagine like how many really would blow the whistle. Right, yeah, it's never going to be the majority. You know,
you think maybe 16 out of 300. You know,
possible. It's possible. That's all I'm saying. But yeah, that alone is very strange, right?
Yeah.
And so one of the Green Berets, and this is again, this is fairly tenuous because he's basically remains anonymous, right? he's one of the Green Berets who allegedly landed there shortly after the Jonestown massacre. And he said in an interview while requesting to remain anonymous by using a false name, Scott Hooker, he explained that this name would identify him to other soldiers who were there. But in detail, he claimed that the Green Berets were under instructions to kill the survivors, right? And he says, this mysterious Green Beret by the name of Scott Hooker said in this interview that as their helicopter was landing, survivors were waving to be rescued, and the Green Berets were ordered to shoot them dead. He described the blood misting into a red cloud around the first man he shot upon exiting the helicopter. And he emphasized that the Green Berets were under orders to turn over the dead bodies in search of explosives before the CIA medical team took over. Strange. Explosives. But
sorry, if you see me looking all around, see the cat right behind me? There's a pregnant cat in the room that keeps like circling around my leg and being annoying.
That's funny.
Sorry, go on. Right. I know I've been looking all around and just so people are like, what the hell's going on? Don't mean to throw you off.
You're
but
good, brother.
I just want to make sure you don't think I'm ignoring you or something. Just like, nah, leave man. Me the fuck alone.
You're good, man.
Yeah.
So according to the New England Journal of Medicine, though, only one third of the bodies at Jonestown had been positively identified more than 6 months after the massacre. No death certificates had been obtained on any of those who had died in Guyana, and a medical legal autopsy should have been performed on every body to establish the cause and manner of death in each case. So the mishandling of the bodies clearly became a major focus of concern in the case. And six leading medical examiners described the handling of the bodies as inept, incompetent, embarrassing, and a case of doing it backwards. And there was even like, I forget who, like what his title was, but there was like an open letter sent in complaint to the military, basically saying by one of the leading, you know, medical examiners in the country, basically, that he basically said that, It was entirely inept. He, you know, confirmed what I just said, and he believed exactly the same thing, and that they should have just clearly taken a fluid sample from every one of the bodies first thing, and none of that happened, right? At least Leslie Mutu, he did this, but they threw out everything that he did, and they even they had like put ID like tags on each of the corpses. And when they went into American, like when Americans took custody of the bodies, dude, they took off all the identification tags, right? It was very weird. Mm-hmm. And then I guess also they were stabbing the bodies to allegedly let out the fluids because they were baking in the hot Guyana sun. But he could have, yeah, I know, but that's what they said. They said that American Green Berets went by each body and were stabbing them, and so to let out these toxins. But I don't know. It did seem unusual, especially imagine if there were gunshot wounds, and you're just destroying the evidence. I mean, with a stab wound. That's very possible, but anyway. I
would assume that's not protocol at all, even no matter what the state of the body is, because that would be messing up the crime scene, but but whatever. I don't know.
Right. I know. Yeah. But it just keeps getting worse. I mean, on December 15th, the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology performed autopsies on 7 people who had died in Jonestown. These represented the only extensive postmortem examinations conducted in the U.S., and indeed the only examinations beyond the cursory examinations on scores of bodies by Guyana Chief Pathologist Leslie Mutu in the first few days after the Jonestown deaths. Despite the efforts of the pathologists, the autopsies revealed little about the nature and the manner of the deaths, and most of their conclusions were speculative and or based upon media accounts of the deaths in Jonestown. The combination of heat and rain in Jonestown had accelerated the decomposition of all the bodies before they were removed. The further delay resulting from negotiations between the U.S. and Guyana governments, and then within the U.S. itself on how to dispose of the bodies, also contributed to the deterioration of physical evidence. And the greatest destruction of forensic information occurred when the bodies were embalmed prior to the autopsies. And then they basically just, they didn't let any of the families like come ID anyone. And then they cremated all the bodies after. So, no one could ever look at those bodies, right?
Yeah.
And allegedly found in some like unmarked bodies found years after the fact. I'm talking like near 20 years after the fact. Were found in some California medical facility with, and they were Jonestown victims, but they had no identification. They were just, it's very unusual.
And probably were claimed, I'm assuming these were ones were probably said to have been cremated prior, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
So
it's just ridiculous, man.
Which this seems to be, which, I mean, I don't know, if we're, we've kind of alluded to, we are of the opinion it was probably some sort of MK Ultra op. So I mean, it would make sense you'd want to hold onto the bodies to do whatever post-mortem, research you can do. I mean, not that, right. I don't know what you could really extrapolate from that, from a dead, from a dead body, but I don't know, maybe something. Right. But it is funny how often they seem to, whenever it's these big things, there always seems to be this knee-jerk reaction to want to cremate. I know they tried to do that with Kenneth Trenadue. Multiple times.
I remember that
got stopped by the family. But yeah, go on.
Oh, and by the way, what not Jolyon Klebold had sent me as well. He didn't send it to me. I think he just posted this, but it was what we had talked about. I don't think it was even during recording, but we had talked about it at one point, and it was basically that a pupil of Jim Jones was hanging out with Tim McVeigh. Which that was like, whoa, man, of course that would happen. But so anyway, while the American media focused almost entirely on the cyanide laced Flavor Raid, painting a picture of a voluntary mass suicide, very little attention was paid to the Guyanese chief pathologist, Leslie Mutu, who initially examined the bodies in the first few days. And so Dr. Mutu had found fresh needle marks at the back of the left shoulder blades of 80 to 90% of the victims. I feel like when you go through the body count of what Leslie Mutu found, he's got the smoking gun. I mean, they tried to discredit him so quickly. They tried to act like the discrepancy in the body count and the reason of the rising ballooning toll, was basically because the Guyanese can't count. I mean, that was literally what they said. And then later they readdressed it in some sort of press briefing. And the only thing that they ever said, and this is now taken at face value as the official truth of the narrative, is that basically they just uncovered new facts. But they didn't detail anything about what they uncovered. They didn't explain anything. And that was that. So, I mean, that's just ridiculous that if you read what the chief pathologist claims, the first on the scene, Right. And on top of that, by the way, I should mention that one of Burnham's political party secretaries had allegedly visited the site of the massacre only hours before it occurred. Right. And inexplicably, among the first to arrive at the scene was the wife of Guyanese Prime Minister Forbes Burnham and his Deputy Prime Minister Ptolemy Reed, who returned from the massacre site with nearly $1 million in cash, gold, and jewelry. And I also read that Jim Jones had gone to Guyana with at least $15 million in cash in suitcases. And I had read that no one ever knows nor knew where that money went. And also that he potentially had accumulated up to $26 million in all these different isolated bank accounts, right? And so, yeah, no one knows where that money went. And then by the way, top Guyanese officials were all accused of accepting payoffs, right? Mm-hmm. And there was this whole scandal in Guyana after this, and they dubbed it Templegate. And this was never reported on in the U.S. Like, that's so crazy to me. But so anyway, beyond the 80 to 90% of the victims having needle marks at the back of their left shoulder blades, others had been shot or strangled. One survivor reported that those who resisted were forced by armed guards. The gun that reportedly shot Jim Jones was lying nearly 200 feet from his body. Not a likely suicide weapon.
Yeah.
So, and to that point, the suspicious autopsy allegedly performed on Jim Jones' body revealed that Jones had an inhumane level of pentobarbital in his system, which is a drug commonly used for animal euthanasia and to execute prisoners on death row. So, as Chief Medical Examiner Mutu's testimony to the Guyanese grand jury investigating Jonestown led to their conclusion, this is nuts, that all but three of the people were murdered by persons unknown. Yeah. That was the conclusion.
Sounds a lot less like a mass suicide event.
No doubt.
Which is funny, especially since it clearly was like, we talked about the White Knights and how this was over mm-hmm. and over again. It almost like a training for it, but it's like, yeah. It almost sounds like it failed. So,
it does.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if it was, like, it's hard to get off the fence with that because honestly, it's like, they clearly took advantage of the opportunity to, I think, basically self-destruct the mission, right? It was like, we're overexposed. MK Ultra dies here in the minds of the American public, mm-hmm. right? Like, that was almost like how it feels to me. It feels like, get rid of Congressman Leo Ryan. We lure him down here, right? And now there is a little bit more that kind of like lends credibility to that idea. And because I'm telling you, it seems like Mark Lane had prior knowledge of this massacre allegedly going to take place. And he rushed down here after basically threatening Leo Ryan in this roundabout way as the attorney for the People's Temple, trying to keep him from ever coming down on his fact-finding mission. But whenever it was clear that Leo was coming down, Mark Lane freaked out. And that was when he, by the way, was, I can't remember, Grace Walden Stevens or Walden Grace, I can't remember her name. But anyway, I'll get to that if we end up talking about the MLK connection. But mm-hmm. yeah, she was in his custody at the time when all of this happened. And basically, he and another temple member were like they were discussing this with Jim. They were corresponding with Jim, talking about how do we get Grace Walden Stevens down here, who was the wife of James Earl Ray's landlord and was the one who allegedly saw the shooter and claimed it was not James Earl Ray. And she was like, they put her into the psychiatric, into some psychiatric facility and tried to hide her. And then she was put into Mark Lane's custody. And then she disappeared right when Jonestown happened with no death certificate, nothing. It's totally crazy. And in the whole time, they were trying to use a black market passport, or they were trying to figure out a way to use, I forget the name of the People's Temple member who had recently died, and they were just going to use her passport to get Grace Walden Stevens down there under false pretenses, under a fake identity. So if anybody believes that the final death list of Jonestown, the Jonestown death, you're out of your damn mind. There's no way. I mean, come on, man. I mean, Jim Jones held every single passport there, as far as I know. Right? And I think a lot of people were there. And I mean, nobody knew they were there. You know, And I think that there were victims of MKUltra at these facilities. And by the way, Bo Gritz makes this statement and makes this claim later on. I noted it down. That basically the Montreal experiments, they would have just taken some of those victims and sent them to Jonestown, get rid mm-hmm. of them.
Yeah.
Which that to me is like, well, let's just exploit this, you know, alleged crisis and deconstruct this mission, right? Get rid of some, right? Like to me, it's kind of like a great opportunity to get rid of some additional bodies. Even if it was just the British Black Watch troops or the whoever else, you know, who could have exploited this for that exact same reason. Why else were we getting such a rising death toll for so many, I mean, a few weeks? So anything could have been happening at that point. And to me, it's like we cannot be certain basically of anything that happened at Jonestown. But never should we take seriously any type of official statement of the people listed who were found dead at Jonestown. I mean, I don't take that seriously at all. No. So anyway, other than that, I mean, we have one survivor reported, right, that people who resisted, like I said, were forced by armed guards. And then the point I was trying to make, though, besides the phenobarbital and Jim Jones system and all that crazy nonsense. Chief Medical Examiner Mutu, his testimony, like I said, their conclusion was that only two had committed suicide. Several pictures show the gunshot wounds on the bodies as well. The U.S. Army spokesman, Lieutenant Colonel Schuler, he said this, "No autopsies are needed. The cause of death is not an issue here." The forensic doctors who later did autopsies at Dover, Delaware, were never made aware of Dr. Mutu's findings.
It's like a Jedi mind trick. there are only suicides here. Look no further.
Honestly. Now, here's a crazy statement. Of the 909 bodies found at Jonestown, only seven were autopsied, right? Mm-hmm. Out of the seven bodies autopsied, five were ruled death by cyanide poisoning. Out of the five bodies ruled death by cyanide poisoning, only one actually had cyanide in their system. So, I mean, that's crazy. And none of them showed the characteristics of cyanide death. I forget there's a specific term for death by cyanide. I can't remember, but yeah, you basically, your whole the skeletal structure contorts and you have like this messed up grin on your face when you're found dead. And so none of the bodies showed any of that. Right.
Yeah. So, assume it like makes your muscles tense up. So that's probably where the grin comes from.
So you
said only one was found cyanide, but there was the injection or the needle marks or whatever it looked like in their rear shoulders. So is what they're getting at here is it was some sort of other chemical of some sort, just not cyanide. And it's just that they were just saying, oh, it's just cyanide. You know, that, right. I mean, obviously the idea would just be make it simple. It was all the same thing throughout, same MO for all the deaths is what they're kind of trying to allude to, essentially.
Right. Well, I mean, Leslie Mutu, he believes that they were all basically murdered, right? And that, you know, And by the way, that there was this theory that it could have, the injections, they could have been just because of their daily routines of going to that medical facility at Jonestown. So they could have been just getting these daily injections that, so I didn't really consider that at first, which that's possible. I mean, it's possible, but, but at the same time that Leslie Mutu's claiming that most, there's a lot that were shot or strangled. Right. So yeah. And then I also read something where they said that they could have honestly just like drank some sort of sedative that, that put them all to sleep. And then basically while they're passed out, people just go body to body and just take them out while they don't have to actually deal with any sort of, you know, fight, you know? So I don't know. There's a lot of different theories that are floated out there, but yeah, the fact that the bodies were mishandled to that extent, right? The fact that only seven were autopsied in the first place. I mean, that's why they couldn't find. So they have no idea what was in the other bodies, right? Because, I mean, that's the narrative, right? So we're all just supposed to believe on its face that they drank the cyanide, case closed. Mm-hmm. It's clearly why they died.
Yeah.
But then I just read to you what this Green Beret whistleblower, yes, he remained anonymous. Yes, who knows how much you can hold that as credible. But he claims they were sent in there to take out the survivors, right? So who knows? And clearly, I mean, they were doing some MK Ultra, you know, style programming there. So I don't know how many would have actually resisted and rejected that. I'm not sure. It's hard to say, but it seems like from the original reports, 400 might have gone through with it and 700 said, hell no. And they ran out into the jungle and were then massacred by British Black Watch troops. The Guyanese, defense forces, you know what I mean? Or the Green Berets, right? Mm-hmm. Which we at least have some anonymous account of that potentially happening. But anyway.
Yeah, so, I have a hard time believing that virtually almost none of them killed themselves. considering our talks prior and the idea of like that they've been working up to this, and it seems like they'd, you know, fairly successful to some extent, brainwashing of some sorts. I mean, maybe, I don't know, maybe not. Maybe this was to some extent. I know a lot of people like to make the claim that MK Ultra didn't really work. They weren't really able to do it like they could. And so maybe this was some sort of attempt to try to, and they're just really trying to, maybe they thought once we got out in the jungle, we could really then control all factors and really, but maybe there is something within a human spirit that's like, fuck you. So I don't know. Yeah. But I mean, I feel like, I do think probably majority, if I had to guess, just surmise, probably did, were murdered as opposed to kill themselves. But I still would think there would be a substantial amount that did. Yep. So I do struggle to find Mutu's findings to be indicative of that it was like a 90-10, 95-5, like, you know, murder/suicide scenario. Right. I would assume it'd be more like a 60-40 if I had to guess. Yeah. But like, I don't know if that's what you're thinking.
That, I mean, that's what makes sense to me as far as listening to the death tape, listening to some of the Jonestown tapes in general. Like, man, if you're to believe it, I mean, everything that I read, they worshiped that guy. You know, they worship Jim Jones. They saw him as a prophet, as a father, as, you know, clearly a rapist. You know, no, I don't know, but it's the rapist. Yeah, but honestly, man, like I said, we're never going to have a certain answer on how exactly that happened. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, in my opinion, unless we get all those 5,000, you know, top secret documents that we can't FOIA, you know, then maybe we'll get some answers. But I think that at least I believe like we have enough evidence that creates this. It's clearly to me, it's compelling enough that this mm-hmm. is a CIA operation, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I believe Jim Jones had a handler who brought him in, and this was Dan Mitrione. I mean, mm-hmm. that's who it was, right? And so, and you look at his background carefully, Jim Jones is affiliated with nothing but spooks. I mean, that's, yeah. and there's a reason that he comes back from going to Guyana, going to, you know, Belo Horizonte, and then he comes back with money in his pocket, with doomsday scenarios, getting his church back and taking them to Ukiah under this doomsday template. And then, I mean, it just escalates from there.
Yeah.
And it and all think, happened.
I didn't mean to cut you up. I was going to say, and I think next episode we're going to Mitrione. I don't know if you saw the private chat, but I realized as we're going through this, especially with the other loose ends and the MLK, I'm like, we have at least another episode. So
damn it, brother.
Yeah, no, you're fine. I'm whatever. We'll keep going. I don't give a shit. We'll do 8 for whatever if it works. But there's definitely far more to be mined here. I think if we were to finish this tonight, it'd be a 2.5 hour, 3 hour podcast. Maybe one day I'll be in a martyr made type scenario to where I'm able to carve out 3-4 hours of my day to do type of shit, but I'm not. So I'm not trying to tackle all of this, and I don't want to try to shortchange the audience in what. Or at least, as I was saying earlier, just kind of like, I guess, the audience, but it's also kind of like myself, because it's like I have more I want to talk about this. So I don't want to minimize this to just like an hour and a half when I'm like, this is clearly 2.5-3 hours right now that we have left. Right. So, yeah. So I think next episode we'll get to the loose ends. I don't know if there's anything else you. And so I was trying to stop you before you got too deep into Mitrione.
I was about to go all the way in, man.
So, I don't know if there's anything else in this vein of the topic that we're kind of talking about, just kind of like, I guess we're talking about body count and that kind of stuff. But if not, I mean, let me know if there's anything else you want to cover before we get into loose ends and then kind of maybe COINTEL/MLK connections, go ahead.
Honestly, I think we might as well just start with Dan Mitrione next episode.
Yeah, I agree. That's why when you said Mitrione, I'm like, nope, I think we're at the right spot. So let the audience know where you are or where to find you. this works out well anyways, because I think the cat that was like pacing around my feet, she's like should be due any time now. I thought she was going to give birth like a day or two ago. So it's like, I'm like, she's acting weird. I think she's ready to go here soon. So it works out perfectly anyways. So let people know where they can find you. There's another episode that'll be coming here soon. It works out well. Cause I've been keeping my schedule wide open because I've been having a lot of breaking stuff with the 764 stuff. So it works out that I have this one to throw in for next week, probably anyways. So, awesome. Let people know where they can find you. I don't know if we kind of talked about what you've done. And maybe given a hint of, do you have any sort of ideas of kind of where your psyche is leading you now? What do you think you're going to cover next, or do you even have an idea? Just kind of roughly, where to find you, kind of maybe stuff that might be upcoming, that kind of thing.
Cool, Jose. I appreciate you, brother. I love you, man. I honestly thank you for having me on as much as you have, and man. It's just been fun. I appreciate the conversation, dude, honestly.
Me too.
But anyway, beyond that, the podcast, it's called The Underclass Podcast, all audio streaming platforms, basically. And you can find me on Twitter at Underclass Pod, on Instagram at The Underclass Podcast. And honestly, man, I'm going to have to go through, my ritual sort of scenario and brainstorm. I usually try and like unless something strikes me immediately and mm-hmm. from a conversation that I've had, or then I usually try and kind of like digest what I've been researching for a little bit and then see what tangential, what thread I can tug on next. Yeah, exactly. And so honestly, I don't like being too repetitive in my subjects. So like I try and not do like back-to-back mass shootings or back-to-back, pedophile networks or something, because one, it helps me kind of like take a break, get some other sort of, just Sometimes I just need a little bit of a,
a grounding.
disassociate from, yeah, I need to ground myself, no doubt. But yeah. But yeah, I have to disassociate from some of those areas of research and interest, because it's just a little too dark when it's compounding, you know, just too much exposure goes a long way. I'll just put it that way.
I agree. I was thinking today, well, just recently, I think Cassandra McDonald put something out about free Assange. I think there was some new news. I don't know the specifics of it. I've been too embroiled in like satanic pedophile stuff, like not doing it, obviously exposing it. But so it's, and I know I quote tweeted and I was like, free Assange too. And I was like, crap, I need to do an episode. Cause I realized as I was tweeting that, I'm like, I have never done an Assange episode. And how have I never? And then part of my me was like, what the, like, I'm like clear, like so far down the rabbit hole of crazy shit. And I'm going to like cover Assange. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, it's an important topic, but it's like, it's so far more grounded than the stuff that I've been covering.
No, I know,
but it's
exactly
like, you know what? I might need that.
It's good for you, brother. Yeah, no, it'll be good. No, but beyond that, man, there's some crazy connections with Julian. Like, when I did my Assange episode, and you know, he was a part of that and what was that hacking group, Anonymous, back in the day in the early 90s. So he was basically, I forget the name, his hacker name back then. It was super cool reading about all of that. But I read this crazy story about how Assange, and you know, he has this platinum blonde hair, and how he was basically in a fucking MK Ultra cult called The Family in Australia when he was growing up as a child. And this woman would force all of her followers to dye their, and they were largely children, which was very weird, and to dye their hair platinum blonde. And she conducted all these weird MK Ultra techniques, and she has direct connections to this this guy who's like, when this all happened because of Julian's mom, who was I guess, I don't think that she married this guy, I think she was just dating him, and he was like, he seems pretty insane, at least from everything I was reading, and that he like even stalked their family after the fact whenever that his mom pulled, like they broke up and they left this cult, and they were then harassed and stalked by this guy. And it turns out he has, like, there are implications pointing to intelligence connections with this guy. So, man, when I didn't include that in my episode, but I just thought, holy shit, if I did another Julian Assange episode, I would have to tug on that thread just to see how compelling that really is. Who knows? I'm not trying to, you know, it's the last thing I want to think, because, you know, we need someone like Julian Assange. Yeah. We, you know, I've used WikiLeaks so often, you know, it's like just with the Pizzagate episode with the Seth Rich thing, how that basically all happened because he leaked the Podesta emails. But I mean, it's just such a valuable resource. And I would hate, I would hate to think that it was some controlled op, which I don't think it is, but holy shit.
I heard some theory just the other day, and maybe I'll have to have this person on to talk about it at some point. I don't know to what credence I would give it. I don't remember the specifics, that I have to see more like sources of what they were getting at. But they were laying down some, like, if I trust your source of what, like, you know, where you come from. Okay, making some good points, but they were making had the theory that Assange may have orchestrated in some form or fashion, or his peons to some sense, the death of Seth Rich to distract from the actual leaker, which I guess that plays into something to do with the some sort of change, some sort of, I forget the specifics of, like, some sort of, they somehow changed when it looked like the leaks came out, because in actuality Seth Rich died before the leaks or something. I forget the specific. I don't remember I'd have to like look into it. But essentially, the point being is that, like, he may have played some part in that too. But I mean, I guess my head goes, and well, okay, but don't be wrong, that still would be wrong, immoral, but I don't know enough about Seth Rich to know, like, if that's a worthy death. And also, like, the kind of stuff he's doing, it's kind of like, oh, well, we need to, like, I don't know. There's, to some extent, you know, once you get in this espionage world, it gets, it gets a little bit more, the lines become gray. So it's like, yeah, he could still sort of be the good guy, but still be doing kind of fucked up shit. I don't fucking know. Right. So, dude. I mean, I don't know enough about Seth Rich to know, like, but anyways, my point being, I'll definitely have to, and I was thinking with the Sanj thing, there are definitely so many tangents to go off of and all the stuff we talked about that it still could be interesting. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'll have to do at least a grounded episode before I go full on, like, let me tell you why he might be evil.
Right. I know, man. That's why I didn't put it in there either. I was just like, man, this fucks up my whole narrative here.
Yeah, which, but, I mean, sort of does, sort of doesn't. Like I said, there's nuance to be had.
Honestly,
I don't fucking
know. It was somewhat tenuous. It wasn't, you know, but I haven't exhausted that line of research either. So who knows? Could lead somewhere. But
who knows? I don't fucking know. Yeah, that guy was so embroiled in that, like, the, I guess it's almost espionage, I guess you could say, but like in a private sense almost, you know,
and counter espionage, like,
counter espionage. Yeah. So, I mean, later, there are going to be lines that are going to be crossed at some points. They're going to be gray areas probably. So, I mean, it is what it is, but, with that, I mean, this has been a great episode. We'll have another one coming soon and maybe that one will be the last. We'll find out. but with that, if you guys like this, you can follow the show on YouTube, all the major obligatures, Rumble as well, Odyssey too. And then you can follow me on Twitter at Tower Gang Jose. You can want to support me, patreon.com/NoWayJose2020, like, share, subscribe, comment, all that good stuff. Bump this up and the algos. And with that, we are out.